Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome Cynthia Ruiz. She is an inspirational author and speaker and a leadership expert, receiving over 50 accolades and awards for her leadership and service to Los Angeles. She currently serves as a Los Angeles City Commissioner, overseeing a multi-billion dollar pension portfolio for city employees. She has received the prestigious Hollywood Chamber Woman of Distinction Award, the Hope Ray of Hope Award, and the Weingart Woman Building LA Award. Twice the California Apparel News has listed her on their renowned list of influential people, and LA Weekly showcased her in their People edition. Cynthia has over 20 years of experience teaching and public speaking. She is the author of two books, Cherokee Wisdom, 12 Lessons for Becoming a Powerful Leader, and Finding Sane Relationships in a Crazy World. She appeared in Discover the Gift, the movie and book, with such notables as His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Michael Bernard Beckwith, Jack Canfield, and many more. Her career has placed her in many leadership roles, including the president of the Board of Public Works for the City of Los Angeles, where she had oversight of 5,000 employees and $1 billion per year budget. She has worked as an executive at the number one container port in the U.S. and has successfully run her own business. Coming from blended cultures, Latina and Native American, she enjoys a passion for life and an appreciation of the gifts of Mother Nature. Cynthia knows the importance of giving back and always strives to stay humble. As a Latina, she has a passion for women empowerment and started the Wise Latina Network. Her Cherokee values have inspired her to teach others with her lessons. She has done this through her books and her workshops, and so it's my pleasure to welcome Cynthia. Cynthia, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Hello, David. Yes, you did. Hello from Los Angeles.
Hello. Well, once again, let me ask you how you are tonight.
Well, David, I am blessed. And first of all, I just want to thank you and acknowledge you for all the work that you do. You know, your show, Different Strokes for Different Folks, is such an important platform. In today's world, we get so much negativity. So having that positive platform and your show is so important. So thank you for having me as a guest.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thank you for those words, kind words. The particular reason I asked you again how you were doing, I figured that you would rightly say that you were feeling blessed again. And it's my imagination that you say that 99% or more of the time. Is that correct?
I do. And you know what? The more I say it, the more I feel blessed. And the more I feel blessed, the more I am blessed.
Absolutely. That is wonderful, and that just shows the power of affirmation and power of positive thinking, wouldn't you say?
I agree, but it's interesting because, I mean, you're obviously a spiritually conscious person, but when the average person asks you how you are and you say you're blessed, they do a double take. They're like, we weren't expecting that answer. They're like, wait, what? What did you say? I said, yes, I'm blessed. And they're like, oh, because most people, when they ask you how you're doing, they really don't want to know. It's just, you know, like, being nice. But yeah, I am blessed.
Well, how long have you felt that way, Cynthia? That is the question.
Well, I think it's been an evolution, and it really goes hand in hand with my spiritual journey. And the more spiritual I become, the more conscious I become, the more that I realize that I am truly blessed. And I remind myself every day. Every morning when I wake up, the very first thing, as soon as I open my eyes, I do my gratitude list. What am I grateful for? And sometimes I'm just happy to wake up.
Yeah. I totally resonate with that.
And that's one thing that we've seen in 2016 as the year comes to an end. We've seen so many, you know, celebrities and people that, you know, celebrities that I admired, you know, everybody from Prince and David Bowie and, you know, all these different people making their transition. So, you know, I'm grateful to be alive.
Yes, I agree. Well, I'm wondering if we could start off by having you share a little bit of your spiritual journey. And we're certainly going to talk about your latest book as one of the main points. And callers on the line will welcome your input later in the show. But would you be willing to share a little bit about your spiritual path?
So I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to start today and then move backwards. So today I have a spiritual practice, and I mentioned already I do my gratitude list. But there's two more parts to my spiritual practice, prayer and meditation. Every day I pray and meditate. I like to say prayer is talking to God or the Creator, and meditation is listening. So I have those three things I do every day, my gratitude list, prayer, and meditation, which helps me stay grounded and balanced. Now, I'm not going to say I was always this way. I grew up in the inner city in Los Angeles, a very rough upbringing. I was the first person in my family to go to college. I grew up in the middle of gangs and drugs and negativity and all this stuff. My family, when my parents divorced, we started off on welfare. So starting off from welfare, fast forward where I am today, I just feel so grateful that through hard work and education and my spiritual belief, I've been able to do some great things. I mean, in the introduction, you mentioned some of the things I've done, and it's pretty miraculous that I've been able to start from nothing and be able to accomplish so much. But I don't take credit for all that. I really believe that the credit goes to the Creator. I say Creator, God, Universal Consciousness, doesn't matter what you call it. You know, having the Creator in my life has really opened the doors and blessed me to do some pretty amazing things. So I don't take credit. It really always goes to my having that spiritual practice in my life.
How important do you think it is for people to come to understand that as a part of their coming to self-realization?
Well, I think it's a number one thing. As a matter of fact, the other day, my brother works a 12-step program. He's in AA, and he was taking his a cake for 13 years of sobriety. And so he asked me if I would go and give him his cake. And so I did. And when I was sitting there listening to the steps, I thought, wow, this is powerful, because I wish everybody had these steps, because the first thing they're telling you basically is surrender. You know, give up control and surrender and have that spirituality in your life. And I'm like, wow, this is powerful stuff. Everybody should have this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the 12-step programs were one of God's gifts to the 20th century, and they certainly healed so many people. I'm a member of a couple of 12-step programs myself for many decades. And, I think that anybody could benefit from attending an open AA meeting. I think that they would really, really come to have their eyes opened about possible ways to live their life. And so I'm just putting that out there since you brought it up.
Right, and I think, and that's what I was saying, I was sitting there listening to, as they were opening the meeting, all the steps that they were talking about, and I thought, wow, this is really great stuff. But let me go back to the spiritual practice for a minute, because one of the things that I said is my cornerstone of my spiritual practice today is meditation. I want to tell you, meditation did not come easy for me. It was a process and many years to get to the point where I can actually be comfortable with meditation. You know, I'm a type A personality. I'm a Capricorn. So I would sit down to start to meditate, and then I'd start in my mind do my list of things to do. Okay, I got to go to the market. I got to get this done. I got to. And so It was hard to sit still and quiet my mind. So I actually took several meditation classes, and I don't know if you're familiar with Reverend Michael Bernard Beckwith with Agape International Spiritual Center.
Yes,
but that's where I attend services. So that's where I attend services, and I took a class with him. And he, something so simple kind of just like turned on the light bulb for me. He said, when you hear noises, what you do, for example, if you're sitting there trying to meditate and the dog starts barking, instead of focusing, giving it energy that you're hearing a noise, what you do is you acknowledge it and then let it float away. And once I incorporated that simple little idea into my meditation practice, then I'm able to really get into a deep meditation to the point where 2 years ago I spent a week with Deepak Chopra at his center, and we were meditating 3 hours a day, which I never thought I would be able to accomplish. But you know, it's a practice. So my message to your listeners is that if you don't get it right the first, second time, or even, you know, it takes a while, that's okay. Don't be hard on yourself. Just keep going, and eventually it'll come. You may just start sitting there for 5 minutes. You may do guided meditation. Whatever works for you, but having that stillness, I actually now feel very connected to the Creator, and I do get messages. So I'm very grateful for that.
That's wonderful. Wonderful words of wisdom about meditation. I too had a similar experience, because I tend to be kind of driven, and I just like to let thoughts bubble up. I purposefully let go of any judgment about having a thought, so that I'm not beating myself up, and just let it float up, and before you know it, I'm in the zone. So it really does take work, and it's well worth it, folks. Thank you for sharing your experience.
And what does it feel like for you, meditation?
Well, it just feels like total peace. And I feel one with whatever there is out there. It's letting go of that ego and being in a place of alignment with my spirit, that, you know, all I ever wanted was serenity and joy. And I find both of those things when I meditate. You know, if I give it enough of a chance, that is, because sometimes I cut it short. But I find that these days it's easy for me to get into the zone pretty quickly, and at some points all it takes is 3 deep breaths and I'm there.
And I think for me, initially, meditation was counterintuitive. Because I'm such a go-getter, I thought I had to get up and do stuff. And the idea of sitting there doing nothing was like, what do you mean sitting there and doing nothing, and that's how I'm going to get the answers? It didn't make sense at first. But then I started listening to all the great, you know, spiritual speakers, and everybody had something in common. They all meditated. So now I'm so fortunate that I'm able to meditate every day, and I have to say it's changed my life. It's changed my perspective on life, and I'm so grateful I have that practice.
How has it changed your perspective?
I'm more open. I'm more tolerant. And I realize that, and you said this in the beginning of the show, everybody's different. I realize that each and every one of us, we have our own individual journey. Now, your journey's not better than mine. It's your journey. My journey's not better than yours. It's my journey. So once you realize that everybody is on their own journey and you can practice non-judgment, because I don't judge you for things you do, because that's whatever lessons you're supposed to learn in your life, mm-hmm. and I respect you as an individual. So I think it's brought acceptance, non-judgment, and patience into my life.
I can hear what you're saying. It makes absolute sense to me, and I relate to it. I think one other thing that I'd like to mention to the listeners is that there's more than one way to meditate, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. Whatever works for you, and sometimes it's just as simple as sitting in nature and observing the beauty of nature, or immersing yourself in music, whatever brings you to a place where you're letting go of the subconscious. And so I think that it's important to consider that there are different ways that you can meditate other than just sitting in silence. What would you say about that, Cynthia?
Well, David, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that I really enjoy, and I think it comes from my native side, is being out in Mother Nature. Now, I go hiking on a regular basis, and most people wouldn't think of Los Angeles with all our traffic as being a hiking city, but we have so many hiking trails, and you can get up into the mountains, and it's so beautiful. So being in nature, or we also have the ocean, going and sitting in front of the ocean and seeing the rhythm of the ocean, because everything in life runs in cycles. There's a rhythm to everything. And getting in tune with that rhythm of Mother Nature, to me, it's so grounding and so soothing, and it helps me stay grounded in this crazy world.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Would you talk a little bit about your Native American background and spiritual practices?
Right. So I am half Cherokee. Now, Cherokee, in the United States, there's about 570 federally recognized tribes, and every tribe is a little bit different. So with the Cherokees, we actually started off in the South, in Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, the Carolinas, all that entire area. That's where we lived for many, many years until the settlers came in. And then we were forcibly removed and went to Oklahoma. That was through something called the Trail of Tears. And once we ended up in Oklahoma, that's where the Cherokee Nation exists today. We have about 350 registered members of the tribe. And we have a government structure, so we have our principal chief and elected officials that govern for us. And with the Cherokee values, we were always taught to be in harmony and balance with the universe. Most Native American tribes pray to the four directions, what we call the four cardinal directions, which are east, south, west, and north. But the Cherokees had a three-dimensional way of thinking. So in addition to the four cardinal directions of prayer, we also pray to above, realizing that we're connected to the universe. We pray below, realizing that we're connected to Mother Earth. And then we pray to the center where we're at, so we can have that holistic concept of that we are part of the whole universe and we are connected. So the Cherokees have always believed in harmony and balance, and that's why Mother Nature is so important to us. So what I share in the book, because I think our lives get so complicated, sometimes going back to ancient wisdom can be very profound. So I think that everybody has the ability to be a leader. We're leaders in our family, in our social circles, in our jobs. So what I share with everybody, the readers in my book, is 12 attributes of leadership. And basically what these are is they're cultural values of the Cherokees that we believe are important in leaders. And the first and foremost is integrity. And the way we define integrity is doing the right thing, no matter if anybody else is around or not.
I like that definition.
Well, I mean, it's easy to do the right thing if you know somebody else is watching. But
yeah.
if you have a moment, and one of the examples I use in the book is, what if you're walking down the street and you find a wallet? And you find a wallet and you open up the wallet and there's cash money, there's credit cards. What do you do? I mean, you have choices, mm-hmm. right? You can take the
Absolutely.
Cash out, put it in your pocket and return it. You can throw it away. I mean, there's a lot of different choices. But when you mm-hmm. act with integrity, you're returning it just the way you found it. And I believe in what's called the law of reciprocity. What you put out is what you get back. I'm very blessed
yeah.
and I'm very lucky, but I give so much and it comes back to me in so many unexpected ways.
Well, you know, there's something that I heard from my mother once that really struck a chord for me. And this is somewhat related to what you were just saying. And that was leave things the way they were or make it even better. And that really, really hit a chord for me.
The other thing that's important about leadership in the Cherokee values is be humble. Just because you're a leader and you have responsibility to inspire others doesn't make you better than anybody else, and you should always be humble. And I know that a lot of times, especially if you look around at leaders in our world today and politicians and all these people, they think that because maybe they have a little power that they're better than anybody, but we all have our own journey, as I talked about before. So humility, in my opinion, is so important. Even when I had fancy job titles in front of my name, President of the Board of Public Works, I was still the same person, and I realized at any point that job title can be taken away, but who I am as a person and my character will remain the same.
How do you manage to let your ego go by the wayside and remain humble? That can be a real challenge for people.
It can, but I realize, you know, it goes back to I'm no better than anybody. I have my journey, and, you know, you have your own journey. Now, when I was in charge of 5,000 people, it wasn't easy. So I worked in beautiful Los Angeles City Hall. So when my days were really hectic, I would actually go to the top of City Hall and look out to the beautiful landscape of the city and just take a few breaths, take, you know, 10 minutes of alone time and kind of get grounded. And that would really keep me going, because I'm like, I would realize I'm connected to something much bigger than myself, and that gave me faith and that gave me assurance that I was on the right path.
I love it.
But let me tell you, it wasn't easy, especially as president of the public works, because that's a male-dominated industry. Because
mm-hmm.
when you look at public works for the city, we're talking about sewers, we're talking about street repairs, we're talking about engineers that build the libraries. So there would be many times it would be a meeting of 30 people, and I would be the only woman, and I was the boss. So I had to work that much harder. I had to come to meetings that much more prepared, and I had to be that much more confident, but still humble when I came to the meetings. So it was challenging, but, you know, I was able to gain respect by being humble and not being, a dictator.
And I imagine, having been in that position, that you must have found respect from other people. And I would think that as a woman in a male-dominated area, that could cause some conflicts.
Well, it would be sometimes entertaining because they would look at me and they'd say, because they called me commissioner, they'd be, "Commissioner, you think outside the box." But they didn't mean it as a compliment. They were like, you know, "We're used to doing the same thing this way, and this is how we're going to do it." And they go, "You think outside the box." And I said, "Yes, I do. But just try it my way, and if it doesn't work, we'll go back to your way." And they're like, "Okay." They try it my way, and they're like, "Oh, it worked." I said, "Okay, so you got to change sometimes because life is dynamic. It's not stagnant, so you always have to be changing and evolving, in my opinion."
Absolutely. Well, can you tell us about the various leadership styles?
So there's traditional leadership styles, and you know, one is the authoritarian, and that's when, you know, it's some, you see the person that says my way or the highway, and you see that in very structured environments like the military or police. The reality is nowadays nobody likes to be told what to do. Then you have the democratic style, which they ask everybody and everybody gets a vote. And then there's some leaders that are very laissez-faire and just a very hands-off approach. The reality, in my opinion, is that there's no one leadership style that works in every situation because human behavior is not an exact science. So because human behavior is not an exact science, leadership is not an exact science. And there's also differences in the way that men and women lead. I'm a professor. I don't know if we talked about that, but I'm a professor and I teach at the graduate level. I teach leadership. And I teach that women lead from social power and men lead from personal power. And that's not saying that one is better than the other. It's just different. So women tend, and this is a generalization, but women tend to look at what's the greater good of the group. They talk a lot about what's going on. They network. And men are more personal power, you know, let's just get the job done and do it. Again, it's not, one's not better than the other. It's different. So you have, you know, so many different styles. You have the fact that people are not the same. And my leadership style changes depend on the group that I'm leading. So knowing all this, what works for me is what I call value-driven leadership. If I make decisions based on my core values, I'll never make a bad decision for me. Now, it doesn't mean everybody's going to like my decision, but I know that it's something that I'm comfortable with and I could sleep at night.
Well, you mentioned that you tend to employ different leadership styles. How do you test the waters and segue into the various leadership styles?
Well, the first thing, it depends on what group I'm leading. I mean, obviously, if I'm a professor in a classroom, I am the leader and there's no doubt about it. So how am I going to lead this group to learn as much information as they can and get good grades? That's why I might employ one type of leadership style versus if I am leading a team at work, leading that team to success, it may be very different. And a lot of it's through communication. Okay, we have this group. Why is this group together? What are we trying to accomplish? How are we going to get there? What's our plan? And how are we holding each other accountable? And then once we complete the process, how do we evaluate it to make sure that it worked? And next time, how can we work, what we can do to make it better? So things are dynamic, and it depends on the situation. It depends on the group. But to me, leadership is the ability to inspire others to do their best. It's not just a matter of telling people what to do and how to do it. It's inspiring others.
It sounds like it's about empowerment, in a sense.
That's my belief, and it's worked for me. And I've, as you know, been in very different situations in executive leadership. When I was working at the City of Los Angeles, you had to inspire people because you couldn't give them more money. You couldn't, you know, if they didn't do their job, you really couldn't fire them. So how do you really tap into them, inspire them, motivate them to do a good job? And that was a challenging group to work with, but I found that a lot of them got inspired and liked me as a person, so they felt loyal to me and wanted to do a good job. But I also am the first one to give a lot of recognition and praise when people do a good job and acknowledge them for their work.
I love that. How do you think women can learn to become better leaders?
Well, I think right now we're going through a whole paradigm shift where the divine feminine is coming into power. You're seeing a lot more women in the workplace, and all the dynamics are changing. One of the biggest obstacles that I have seen with a lot of women, not all, but a lot, is that insecurity and lack of confidence. And one of my favorite things to do is I love to watch TED Talks. And I was watching Sheryl Sandberg, CEO of Facebook, and what she said for women, you just need to realize you have a seat at the table and take the seat at the table. Don't sit in the back and wait for somebody to invite you. Go take the seat at the table. So for women, a lot of times, because it's a new role for them, it's having that confidence and having that letting go of the fear and insecurities. And that's one of the reasons I work so much with young women through a program called Girls Today, Women Tomorrow, where we instill that confidence in them at the young age and give them different experiences so they can gain the confidence and experiences as they take it into the workplace. They go on to get college degrees and become successful leaders.
Fear can be such an obstacle in so many different arenas of life. How do you suggest that people overcome it?
Fear is one of the most powerful emotions there is. Now, it's normal to feel fear, you know, that whole flight or fight, you know, if you're in danger. But the reality is most of the fear that we experience is in our head. And there's so many types of fear. There's fear of failure, fear of success, fear of not fitting in, fear of what people are going to think about you, fear, 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 fear. It's all in your head, though. So there's no easy way to deal with fear other than just walk through it. And you realize once you get to the other side, it's not quite as bad as you thought, but the more you procrastinate, the fear becomes stronger and more powerful. So sometimes, like Nike says, just do it. You just got to take it on and walk through that fear and you know, take the steps necessary to whatever you're trying to accomplish.
You know, I once heard it said by Anthony DeMello, who was a Jesuit priest and one of my favorite spiritual authors, that there are just two states, fear and love. And I thought long and hard about that, and in a way that made sense to me. What do you think about that statement?
Well, I agree, because everything in life has a duality. There's two sides to everything. Well, my personal opinion, the opposite of love is hate. The only way you conquer hate is through love. Mm-hmm. There's light, there's dark. I mean, there's a duality of everything. So if he feels that the duality of fear is love, then putting more love into your life will counter that fear. So I agree with him.
Well, speaking of duality, let's talk about your dual ancestry. Has this helped or hindered your own leadership style?
Well, I'm going to be completely honest here. When I was young, it really didn't feel very comfortable. Because people, when you're young, you want to fit in. And I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. You know, as we talked about, I'm half Mexican and half Cherokee. So I don't speak Spanish, so I didn't feel 100% accepted in the Latino world. But yet, I didn't live on a reservation, so I didn't feel 100% accepted in the Native world. So it wasn't until I became an adult that I embraced both cultures and said, now I feel like I have the best of both worlds. You know, I, from my Latina side, I get my passion for life and my love for music and dance. From my native side, I get my spirituality and my love for Mother Nature. And so now it's great, but it wasn't, I didn't always feel, you know, that it really, that I fit in as a young person. But as an adult, I feel so grateful to have, you know, two cultures that are amazing.
Well, I'd say that you're richly blessed in many, many ways, and that's one of them. What would you say, people who are not Native American, what are some of the most important aspects of Native American spirituality that other people could adopt?
Well, again, it goes back to the harmony and balance and look at your life holistically. You know, holistically, what you want to do is have balance in your life, and you want to look at all aspects of your life. And what I mean by this, obviously, you want to look at your health. You know, are you exercising, you know, on a regular basis and eating properly? Are you taking care of your mental health? And that's what, you know, meditation and prayer does for me. And your emotional health. And what I mean by the emotional health is, you know, we all accumulate emotional baggage as we walk through life. You know, when you're a baby, you start off basically as a clean slate. You know, you cry when you want something, and most of the time you're happy. But as we go through life and have life experiences, they create emotional baggage, which manifests itself into fear, anger, guilt, resentment, all insecurities, all this stuff. So really looking at your emotional baggage and letting that go and releasing that so you are in a healthy emotional state. So when you look at that all together holistically, you know, having harmony and balance in your life to me is what I strive for on a regular basis. I'm not going to say I'm in harmony and balance every minute, because sometimes there might be an experience that takes me out of that. But if I get angry for whatever reason, I said, okay, what was that about? What lesson was I supposed to learn? And then I come back to the center.
I think what is such an important question to ask. It seems to be so much more valuable than why.
Exactly.
You know, you talk about the baggage, and that can be a stumbling block for a lot of people because they start to attach judgment to their baggage and beat themselves up. How would you suggest that people look at their baggage objectively and begin to surrender those aspects of the darkness that they wish to let go of?
Well, in my first book, Finding Sane Relationships in a Crazy World, which sounds like a relationship book, I really believe the most important relationship you could have is with yourself. And once you're happy and healthy, you're going to have healthy relationships. So that book is almost like a workbook, if you will, really looking at different aspects of your life and looking at your emotional baggage and starting to release some of that. So I actually have release exercises. What I like to do and what works for me is if I have emotions that are coming up, and we all have, you know, negative experiences in our life that we're holding on to, I write them down, almost journal them. And then what I do is I get a white candle, because white represents purity, and I burn that. And release that. Say, okay, this no longer serves my life. I let it go. Because I believe our lives are like circles, but only so much fits in that circle. So if you want to bring new amazing things in your life for 2017, you got to let go of some of that old stuff that you've been carrying around that no longer works for you, or there's not going to be room to bring new stuff in. And one of the things that people, we talked about duality, even with forgiveness, you know, forgiveness, there's a duality there. forgiveness of other people that have harmed you or whatever they have done to you. But also, and one of the most powerful forms of forgiveness is self-forgiveness. Forgiving mm-hmm. yourself, knowing that you did the best you could with what you had at the time.
I think that's such an important point, and to recognize that that applies to each step of the way, and that is a wonderful way to let go of judgment of self. And in my opinion, right or wrong, I think that usually the biggest lesson or object of forgiveness is ourselves, as opposed to dealing with others. And forgiveness is such an important part of letting go. Without it, we stay stuck on resentments and things that can be toxic to our souls.
Now, I have a master's degree in counseling, so I've worked with people many, many years. And one recurring theme that I've heard over the years is people want to blame their parents for whatever. Mm. Their parents didn't give them enough attention. Their parents gave them, you know, not too much attention. I mean, everybody has stuff. And so, you know, a lot of times you need to get to a point where you let go of all that parental stuff and family stuff and take responsibility for your own life. I like to say we are the CEOs of our own life, shaped by the choices we make. Each and every day we make choices, and today I choose happiness. I choose whatever has been in the past. I choose to leave that in the past and let that go. And that way, it's not getting in the way of my happiness today.
Well, I like the word choice very much because that certainly underscores responsibility, personal responsibility. And I think that it probably is an eye-opener to some people, maybe not that many people that listen to this show, but the idea that you can choose happiness for yourself as opposed to it being something that just falls into your lap.
Well, happiness is a choice, and I tell people you can choose it every day, and nobody has an excuse because it's free. Happiness is free because people say, well, they want to play the victim. Well, I can't be happy because so-and-so did this to me. I can't be happy because whatever reason. They play the victim. And I said, no, you have the choice. Happiness is a mindset that you can choose every single day, and because it's free, everybody has the ability to choose that.
Yes. Just a little bit of a segue from what you were just saying. Victim mentality can be such a problem for a lot of people, and many folks don't even recognize they possess that. What would you say to people that are stuck and may not realize it, that they can wake up to the fact that they do have the power of choice in their lives?
Well, first of all, you have to pay attention to your words. Words are powerful. So listen to what you say. And if you're always saying it's somebody else's fault, it's somebody else's fault, you know, then you need to look in the mirror and say, well, maybe everybody in the whole world can't be wrong. Maybe there's something that I'm doing to participate there. And again, we learn lessons, so what lessons am I supposed to learn? But what I love, and I'm a fan of positive affirmations, because throughout our life, sometimes we get bombarded with all the negativity, so we have to replace that negativity with something, and I choose to replace it with positive affirmations. So I write down what I want to bring in my life. For example, before I even wrote my first book, I would write down, I am a successful author. Now, nobody in my family had ever written a book. I didn't know how to go about it, but I claimed it. And I said, okay, I'm going to manifest this. Of course, you have to do the work. But, you know, starting with the positive affirmations and reprogramming your brain and what you want to bring in your life is so powerful, and then work towards that.
Well, I'm a big fan of affirmations, and you also talked a little bit about journaling as a tool earlier, and I would just comment that I think journaling is also a good way to get in touch with how you look at the world and how you look at yourself. What do you think about that?
I'm a big fan of journaling, and nowadays I find what people are getting away from the old way of writing it in an actual journal. But if technology is what you incorporate in your life and you want to, you know, make notes on the computer or, you know, on your phone, whatever works for you. But it's really, when you journal, it's really putting your thoughts to paper, if you will, and you can really focus on what it is that you're thinking about, because thoughts are powerful and thoughts are going to take you in a certain direction. And it's also, you know, acknowledging experiences that you have. And when you acknowledge those experiences, you can look at what lesson was I supposed to learn out of this experience, good or bad?
I think that that is a really, really important thing for people to take away. I am having an ambulance go by, so hang on for a minute, folks.
So let's just say a little prayer and bless that person that's in the ambulance.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I think that's a really important thing to do. Is there anything else that you'd like to say about your... Go ahead.
Yeah, well, David, so let's look at what we just happened, because you had a choice. We can say, oh, my God, there's an ambulance. That's such an annoyance. It's interfering with my program. Or you can say, you know what, let's bless that person because obviously they're having potentially a life crisis. So let's not just make it about us. Let's you know, acknowledge them and hope for the best for them.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that perspective. And I would like to go to the phone lines in a couple of minutes, but before I do that, I wondered if there's anything else that you'd like to say about either one of your books. And I certainly, right off the top, would like to ask where the best places listeners can buy your book and how they can get in touch with you.
Thank you for that question. So Amazon.com, just go to Amazon.com and put my name, Cynthia, C-Y-N-T-H-I-A, last name is R-U-I-Z, and the books come up. My first book, Finding Sane Relationships in a Crazy World, is actually in English and Spanish, and the new one, Cherokee Wisdom, 12 Lessons for Becoming a Powerful Leader, is in English. They both have Kindle versions, so if you're the type of person that likes to read on Kindle, that's available. I love to connect with people. I'm a people person. I have a website, and my website is Cynthia, C-Y-N-T-H-I-A, M, Ruiz, R-U-I-Z.com, and they can come and become a member of my tribe. And with my tribe, I send out, I don't bombard people with emails, but I usually send out monthly updates, blog posts, and kind of just let people know what's going on with me. But I love to connect with people. And again, David, I am just so grateful for this opportunity to be able to speak with you.
Well, it's my pleasure. And quite frankly, I'd love to have you back on the show again sometime next year.
Yay!
Anything else that you want to say, underscore about Cherokee Wisdom or your first book?
Basically, that I believe that everybody has the ability to be a powerful leader, and I believe that the lessons in my book can help you develop yourself to be a powerful leader, and I just hope that everybody goes on and buys a book. The other thing I did want to mention for both books is that I believe in giving back, so with both books, I do donate a percentage of my royalties to nonprofits. The most recent book I'm donating to Girls Today, Women Tomorrow, a nonprofit in the inner city of Los Angeles that works with young Latinas from the inner city and helps them become leaders. So again, it goes back to the law of reciprocity, giving back. You know, it helps me succeed, and not that I, you know, give with expectations, but it's just a universal law that I wish everybody would realize.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Well, thank you. That is another wonderful, wonderful notion that I wish more and more would come to embrace. All right, if you're ready, we have 10 minutes left, and I'd like to take the two callers and see if they have any questions or comments for you.
Let's do it.
First caller is Deanna. And Deanna, you're live on the air with Cynthia Ruiz.
Good evening, David, and happy old year and happy new year.
You too.
Hi, Cynthia. I'm going to remember.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi. I'm going to remember east, south, west, north, above, below, center.
Oh, yeah.
I
so how are you doing today?
Well, improving. I was sort of disintegrating, but I'm trying to get back into the wholeness of everything. And it's a slow journey. But thoughts, lofty thoughts lift me up. And what you said, especially about the women having a different style, a social style, really made sense.
And so the good news, what I'm hearing from you, is that it sounds like you've been had some rough times, but you're seeing the light and you're making forward progress. So congratulations.
Thank you. The power of surviving.
It's a choice. It's a choice. Choose happiness.
You know, I read a namesake or a family namesake's book, and I think a lot of people are going to tie those two things together with Don Miguel.
Right.
And I like that yours, you know, has the Cherokee way as well. As a Spanish speaker, as an interpreter professionally, I always read in both languages, but I do not know, not even how to say thank you in Cherokee. So the ideas being translated into the language we speak daily are wonderful, just like what you said about the prayer. Above, below, and center, as well as the cardinal point. So I've enjoyed your conversation. I hope you do come back next year.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm just wishing you love, success, and good things for 2017.
I also wish that for you. And David.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling, Deanna. It's always a pleasure to have you.
You choose right people to
all
inspire.
Right. Thank
good
you.
Night.
Well, good night. Happiest of New Year's to you.
Thank you.
Great.
Wishing
welcome.
You love and light.
There we go. I just disconnected her, but she could hear that.
Great.
We do have another caller on the line. Jay, you're live on the air with Cynthia. Jay, are you there? Well, perhaps he doesn't want to speak. I had spoken with him earlier, and he said that he would be interested in speaking to the guests, but, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen, so that's okay, too.
So, David, let me ask you a question. As we enter this new amazing year of 2017, what are some of your rituals or things that you do to bring on a new year?
Well, keep it very simple, and I don't really think of it in terms of the year. I really try to keep it in the day and more importantly, in the moment.
Mm.
I believe that the present is so important. And you know, one thing that I learned a long time ago, and this comes from 12-step programs, is that the future is just a promissory note, and it's a form of projection. And to me, that is somewhat fear-based. It's not to say that I don't have dreams, because I do, and I do believe in the power of dreams and imagination and visualization. But I like to let things unfold, and I need to surrender my dreams and focus on the present moment, because once it's passed, and I want to enjoy each step of the way.
And, you know, every day is a gift. Do we have time for me to share a quick story?
Oh, please do. Yes, we do.
Okay, so I have a little dog, and every day I walk my dog. And I run into neighbors. I have a very, you know, walkable community. And so there's this one young man, he's 28 years old, and I see him on a regular basis. And so yesterday I ran into him. I hadn't seen him in a while. We got to chit-chatting, and you could tell he was struggling with some things, and we got to talking, and I said, well, I'm going to gift you my books. So we came back, and we're standing out in front of my house, and we're talking, and all of a sudden my dog like disappeared in thin air. He vanished. And I'm like, oh my God, where's my dog? So for 45 minutes we are looking for my dog. And behind my house are hills, and there's coyotes there, so I'm always very worried. So we're running around for 45 minutes. He's panicked. I'm just praying. So finally we get to this one point, and we went in the back, and we're on top of a hill. And it was 45 minutes. I hadn't seen the dog in 45 minutes. So I'm like, oh my God. And my dog is like my baby. So I looked at him, and I said, before this I had asked him, do you believe in God? And he said, I'm on the fence. And I said, okay. So all of a sudden, I told him, I said, the only thing I know how to do when I'm in challenge like this is pray. Do you want to pray with me? And he goes, okay. So we started praying. I prayed out loud. I kid you not. 10 seconds after we finished praying, the dog appeared. And he looked at me, and he's like, what? Oh, my God. He goes, we looked all over. He wasn't there. And he goes, he looked at me, he goes, oh, my God. He goes, prayer's powerful. There is a God. And I said, there is. And he couldn't believe it. He was just like, and so he texted me today, and he says, after that experience, he goes, I'm seeing God everywhere. And
my
I just said,
goodness.
Yeah, thank you, Creator, for using me to help this young man that was struggling open his eyes to the power of prayer and God. So miracles happen every day.
They sure do. That's a beautiful story. Would you like to share if you have any special tradition concerning the new year before we end the program?
I don't do resolutions. That doesn't work for me. But since my birthday is January 5th, right after the first of the year, what I do is kind of a year in review, what worked, what didn't work, what lessons I learned, and then kind of what I want to manifest into my life. Again, goes back to clearing space to create new things. And I just have an excellent, excellent feeling about 2017. Every day, like you said, is a gift, but I feel it's going to be very special in 2017. Despite all the negativity of the news, you know, our lives are made by our choices.
They are, and our attitudes are so important. And thank you for sharing that particular belief. And I so appreciate you being on the show tonight.
Well, David, I really wish you nothing but the best. And, again, keep up all the excellent work that you're doing.
I will do that. And if you don't mind, I'd like to call you as soon as the show is over to set a date for a return engagement.
Absolutely.
Okay. So once again, we come to a close. Let's take time to pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience, can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, and God bless.